Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio, where each week we discuss true crime, then we bond with each other for a few glorious moments, and then move on. Tonight, our show is packed full of guests with very strong opinions. Former prosecutor Wendy Murphy is with us. Wendy is now a victim's advocate and has a great book out. Everybody should get this book at Amazon.com. It's called And Justice for Some. Isn't that the truth? Now, Wendy was on Jane Velez Mitchell the other night, and she said something that I so strongly agreed with. I jumped up and yelled, yes! I can't remember exactly what she said, but I do know one of the expletives made it past the 7-second delay. It was wonderful. And that swear word was, okay, I'm not going to say it, but I'll tell you, it rhymed with bullshit. It was a great TV moment. Also joining us, Katie Cool Lady, who has some really good inside scoop about Jodi Arias and what's going on in the trial. And Levi Page is with us as well. Now, Levi Page is a law-abiding citizen by day and psycho internet crazy attractor by night. All of this and more coming up, but first, a shameless and vulgar attempt by me to sell you something. Sponsorship for Trisha's True Crime Radio is now open. If you would like a live plug read at the top and the bottom of the show, it can be for anything you'd like, actually. If you'd like to sponsor the show, I'd love to hear from you. And what people do is they'll sponsor the show and then give me the name of a charity, and then that charity will sponsor the show. It's whatever you would like to do. If you're interested in sponsoring Trisha's True Crime Radio, email me at tgriff, that's T as in Tom, G-R-I-F, tgriff, at the letter X, and then the word mission, xmission.com, tgriff at xmission.com. Now, I charge exactly what Blog Talk Radio charges me to do the show, and that's $99 per month. I actually charge $100 per month, and then that extra dollar goes into my Living Healthy Fund. That means I use that extra dollar to buy something healthy. So far, I've saved enough to buy two Eskimo pies. To me, if it doesn't contain red dye number 7, I consider it health food. Again, that email address is, if you would like to sponsor Trisha's True Crime Radio, tgriff at xmission.com. And Katie Cool Lady, you have some really interesting stuff for you tonight, don't you?
Well, I do. I actually do. You know,
okay,
hang tight.
I'm going to interrupt you here because Wendy Murphy, you're joining us now, and I need you to listen very carefully to what Katie has to say, because we need your legal opinion on this, Wendy, okay?
Gotcha.
Great. And Levi, stand down. You got to let the women talk for a minute. Feel free to interrupt Levi if you dare. Okay, Katie, tell us what happened in court at the Jodi Arias trial.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm like a little bit nervous because Wendy Murphy is totally one of my heroes. And I just can't believe I'm in the same airspace with you, Wendy. So I'm so grateful to be talking to you and listening to you. So what happened on Thursday that has not been reported, but everybody on Web Sleuth is probably sick of me talking about it all weekend. But, you know, I'm a homicide victim's sister, and I have dealt with the death penalty appeals process for 20 years, and I have gone through all kinds of stuff with that, and my rights being violated, and having to get an attorney, and laws being changed in the state of Arizona because of people showing up on my doorstep and violating the victim's bill of rights, and all that's a little background on me. So on Thursday, Alice LaViolette's on the stand, and you may or may not have seen, but she asked for a break early, 5 minutes early. She couldn't wait 5 minutes to get off the stand and go to the restroom, whatever she needed this break for. I sit with the family in court. So I am literally in the second row behind the family as a support, part of their support team. Alice LaViolette exits the stand after the jury leaves and goes to walk out of the courtroom, but makes a beeline straight for Samantha, Travis's sister.
Okay, now this is, let me stop you, Katie. This is the defense witness that has been on the stand for God knows how many days, talking about Jodi Arias and how Jodi is an abuse victim. This is that witness, correct?
This is that witness who had
okay.
the audacity on that same day to call Jodi the victim in this case and Travis the perpetrator. Literally, she testified those words in her vernacular of domestic violence but just how offensive, and, you know, went on for days talking about how Travis is one of the most abusive men she's ever encountered, and blah, 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 pedophilia, the whole nine yards, just supporting that crazy defense. But instead of leaving the courtroom for this urgent break that she requested to derail the entire court so she could get off the stand, she walks right up to Samantha and gets in her face. Right.
Yeah, Samantha is Travis Alexander's sister.
Yes, and she was
okay.
Sitting there by herself because her head was down. And she was in front of me. I mean, literally, she was sitting right in front of me in the row. And I couldn't tell, honestly, if she was crying. I didn't know. I just saw that her face was down, so I thought she was writing or crying. I didn't know what, but all of the family had left. She was the only one sitting there on the seat by herself. And this woman walks right up to her, leans down, and gets like 6 inches from her face and is talking to her. And I was so stunned that this happened that I couldn't move. And then she stood up. She said something to her. Then she stood up and she made this sort of bizarre gesture with her hands, like kind of like, oh, it's all crazy. And then she walked out. And I immediately just knew how wrong that was. And then I left and I started talking to people in the hallway, the media, like, did you guys see that? It was the day that Juror 5 had appeared in court that afternoon, so all the attention was on Juror 5 on that break. So nobody was looking. And luckily, because I've been blasting this all over cyberspace over the weekend, many people have come forward and said to me that they saw it on the feed, that they were sitting there watching their live feed at home, and they said to their husband or whatever, like, can you believe that? What's going on there? And so I approached Sam after the break and Tanisha and their aunt, and I said, you guys know that violates your rights, because I know, I've been involved in this stuff, and you have the right to not be contacted by any agent for the defense, and you have to know that. And she said, yeah, Juan is taking care of it. So I don't know what was said, but at the end of the day, Juan said something to the judge, like, we need to go deal with that issue or something. And so I don't know, I really don't know what happened. But
so
that's
Wendy,
what I witnessed.
Well,
Wendy
a couple of thoughts. Let me just ask a question first. Do we know what was said? It sounds like you could see her but not hear her. Is that right?
I couldn't, and she was, like, really close in her face and speaking softly, so I couldn't
hear it.
But, Katie,
you told me that if you had to guess, what would it be?
If I had to guess, it was some sort of weird apology, maybe, or, like, this isn't personal. I mean, I'm just totally guessing, and her gesture when she stood up was kind of like what you would do with, like, oh, this is all just crazy, and, you know, I can't make sense of it or something. But it felt like some sort of, like, attempt to mitigate her feelings of discomfort with Sam. And I don't know how upset Samantha was, but she's not supposed to approach her, period, you know. So I really don't know what was said, and I didn't pry and I didn't ask. But it's not been reported on. None of it's come out that I know of, so...
Well, it's interesting. I'll give you a couple of reactions. Number one, Alice LaViolette is not stupid. I mean, I don't think she performed well on the stand, but only because the evidence is so monumentally favorable to the prosecution that she was going to be destroyed no matter what she said. And, you know, I'm ashamed for her. And I've met her. She seems like a lovely person. But, you know, whatever amount of money she makes in this case, I think she'll never be hired again, because everything she said in this case will be used against her, and all the lawyers are already gathering up the transcript of what she's been saying, as well as Richard Samuels, prepared to use it against them in any future case, and they'll be destroyed. This is just the nature of the beast. We who work in this business, will destroy both of those as expert witnesses for the rest of their lives. So I hope it was worth it. I you know, I sort of describe this as the sale of the soul. But on another level, because Alice is so sophisticated in terms of having a lot of experience as an expert witness, it seems to me this would not have been accidental, nor do I think it came from some sincere emotional place. It's likely this was done for strategic gain, just as I think it was done strategically when she said, you know, something about, you're yelling at me, Mr. Prosecutor, you're acting like an abuser, just like with Jody, and all of that is part of the game, a very well-practiced game. So walking over to the victim's family in a courtroom could well have been her attempt, consistent with her fake flu, which I don't know why she became ill when she did, except that it immediately followed one of the biggest lies she told on the stand, which was that she knew of no evidence, none, not a single bit of evidence of Jodi Arias ever being jealous of Travis or his girlfriends, which really, when I heard that, I started laughing. They panned to Martinez, and I think he was grinning. That's the dumbest thing she could have said, and I think that's right after that is when she started sweating. But the point is, there's no way she would have walked over to a member of the victim's family without that being part of a plan. It was not impromptu. It was not, an emotional reaction. I guarantee you she did it for some purpose. So let me speculate a little bit. Let's assume that she did it because she was hoping to provoke a controversy, that Mr. Martinez will use that against her in some way and bring it up on the stand and say, you tried to intimidate one of the victim's family members, didn't you? And she'll say, and she's probably goading him, she'll probably say, and I don't think Martinez will be stupid enough to fall into the trap, but she would want to say, no, I went over to say that I feel for the family and I'm compassionate and I, you know, blah, 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 blah. And she wants to be able to say in front of the jury, I care deeply for the victim and the victim's family. And she's just goading Martinez to make it an issue in front of the jury. That's my guess.
Wow. That is pretty slimy. If you ask me, Wendy Murphy. We have Wendy Murphy. We also have Levi Page and Katie Cool Lady. We're discussing the Jodi Arias trial. Let's let poor Levi talk for a moment. Levi, weigh in. What do you think about what's been revealed so far?
Well, I think that Alice Laviolette has ruined her credibility, as has Dr. Fogg, Dr. Richard Samuels. Sorry for My allergies are acting up, by the way. But I absolutely agree with everything that Wendy Murphy just said. And I think that the issue regarding Alice LaViolette, she was on the stand and she was talking about how Snow White, the Disney character Snow White, could have been a victim of domestic violence. And I think that what Alice LaViolette is what, you know, comparable to Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, who see race and racism in every little thing, and she sees domestic violence in every little thing and can take any situation and say that the woman is being abused. And in this case, there's nothing to corroborate anything that she says. And I don't think that the jury is going to find her testimony in this case that credible at all. And I think they're going to be rolling their eyes at her like they were Dr. Samuels. They asked him sarcastic questions when they got to submit questions to the judge. And I think they're going to do the same thing with Alice LaViolette.
Wendy Murphy, you know Alice. You know this witness. And you say she's a smart woman. What can you tell us about her? Because I'm just shocked that they could find anybody, let alone somebody like this particular witness, to come forward and do this. What can you tell us about her?
You know, that makes me laugh. Not at you. Don't take it personally.
Oh, you can laugh at me. That's fine.
No, but the nature of the legal system in this country, you know, it's all about winning. It has very little to do with the truth. And it sounds so terrible to say that, but it's not. I'm not saying anything that isn't true. Any lawyer telling you the truth would acknowledge that we have an adversarial legal system, which means the winner is all that matters. Who's winning? In other countries, other Western European nations, for example, they have inquisitorial systems where it's all about the truth. They're not as interested in producing a winner, and they really do tolerate some of these shenanigans a lot less than we do. So, number one, let's see what it is, right? It's a trial to produce a winner. If that's the name of the game, you know that there is an expert someplace under a rock somewhere willing to say, for a price, up is down, black is white. I have a whole chapter on this in my book, by the way, and I hope you'll give me a moment to just say,
please,
that your listeners should check out WendyMurphyLaw.com. It's a new website that I had created for the purpose of announcing the distribution of my book And Justice for some new out in paperback now, with a tremendous amount of very compelling information about the JonBenet Ramsey case. First book to come out, by the way, since the Ramsey indictment was announced in January of this year, that the parents were indicted back in 1999 for the death of their child in 1996. My book is chock full of information explaining why they were indicted, how the evidence connects to what they were likely indicted for, and why the child died. And I do not argue, by the way, that she was intentionally killed. So I know Web Sleuth is very interested in the case. I hope they'll check out my book. And anyway, so separate from that, I just want to be clear that we have to acknowledge experts lie for money, and Alice LaViolette makes a living in part testifying for cash, as does Samuels. It's ugly, but it's true. And I'm sorry to say that people will lie for money under oath, but they do.
That is, you would hope in our society, and this is a really Pollyanna approach of mine, but you would hope that wouldn't be true, but it absolutely is. And we have it facing us right now. Wendy, I don't know if I explained this to you, but Katie Couleti is a member of Web Sleuths. And she is with Travis's family every day in the courtroom, and she comes back and blogs and tells us what's going on. So she certainly does have a firsthand view of exactly what is happening. And you mentioned, Wendy, and Jody, I'm going to get to you in just a moment. You mentioned that Alice said, how do you pronounce that, LaViolette?
I don't know if it's LaViolette or LaViolette. I call her LaViolette. But
LaViolette. Anyway, she said the biggest lie of all, that Jody did not exhibit any signs of jealousy. How can she get away with that? Why would she say something so stupid when she knows that Juan Martinez can come up and just tear her to shreds?
Well, you know, I was a prosecutor for a long time, and it would not be uncommon to hear a hired gun expert say something wild like that, because when cross-examined about that statement, she's going to say, well, I wasn't provided with that information. I told you that what I looked at, I saw no evidence of jealousy. And then, you know, Juan Martinez will say, so you're telling us that the defense did not show you this and this and this and this, and they didn't tell you about that, and so forth and so on. And she will look stupid in the sense that she allowed the lawyers to give her only selected information, but that is such a common tactic. It's just going to make the defense attorneys look as slimy as she has been looking.
Yeah, that's true. And let me ask you about Juan Martinez, Wendy. We have Wendy Murphy with us. Don't forget to check out her new website, wendymurphylaw.com. I'm sorry, Wendy. I'm one of those people that Juan Martinez makes me nervous. He makes me uncomfortable. I know he's not supposed to be here to please me, but he makes me uncomfortable because he's so mean that I'm afraid there's going to be one person on that jury that's going to hate him enough to hang the jury. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. The prosecutor shouldn't have to be judged in terms of his personality. It shouldn't matter if he is aggressive or polite, but it does. And all I can say is, and maybe Katie can respond, all I can say is he must have a very good sense, because he's got a lot of experience. And I've tried cases in front of juries. You have to know your jury. He must believe that they don't like any of the crap that they're watching, and that they are as angry as he is. And the reason he's being openly angry is because he wants the jury to know that he's on their side. If he acts polite, if he is kind, either to Arias or her hired guns, if he is respectful, there's a guarantee that one of the jurors will think to themselves, well, you know, he mustn't think she's a monster. He mustn't think this is all so vicious and horrific as a crime goes, because he's being so polite to these people. He has to be angry. Now, I didn't like what he did with the Snow White stuff. I thought he got off track, and it was not tight. He has otherwise been a very good tactician. He has clearly got a really good handle on the evidence. He asks questions very effectively. He doesn't let even Alice, who's an experienced witness, he doesn't let her do some of the tricks that we know experts use by avoiding answering the question. He keeps saying, that's not what I asked you. That's not what I asked you. And, you know, I used to fantasize as a prosecutor when experts did that to me, because I had an urge to say, am I speaking French? because you really want to slap the witness in the face, but you can't. And so you have to verbally really punch them around a little bit to show the jury that the witness is being disrespectful. And the defense experts are equally well trained to be as calm as Martinez is aggressive. They're both playing this game, and it's a very interesting theater to watch. But at the end of the day, Martinez is right to be angry, because if he doesn't act angry, the jury will think he respects what's going on, and it is total bullshit. Thank you for letting me say that out loud again.
Anything
I know
you want.
Talked
you can
about it. By the way, let me
want.
Just say one more thing. I have a piece at my website all about the Jodi Arias trial, where what I compare this case to is O.J. Simpson for one very simple reason. When there's a mountain of evidence against the murderer, as there was in O.J., and as there is against Jodi Arias, the only way to win, if you're the defense, is to create a monstrous smokescreen, a big, fat dog and pony show to get the emotions of the jury and the attention of the jury over there, not looking at the evidence. Well, for O.J., that tactic was racism. Let's just blow this whole trial up into a big theater of racism, racism, racism. If we talk about racism, they won't pay attention to the mountain of evidence. And it worked. Mm-hmm. In Jodi Arias' case, it's porn. Let's just talk about sex and anal sex and oral sex and every kind of fantasy you can come up with, and we will get the men. Remember, 11 guys on the jury. The defense team intentionally puts 11 guys on the jury in the hope that when they hear about Jodi Arias performing sex acts like a porn star, they're not going to vote for death. They don't want to kill a woman willing to perform sex acts like a porn star. Then let's talk about Travis falsely. Let's lie about Travis as a pedophile. Why? Because a typical heterosexual male is going to be repulsed by that. It's pure crap, and it is meant only to manipulate the jury into voting against the death penalty. The jury is offended, and they are angry, and to be manipulative of a jury today, when they know what happened in O.J., they are going to come back with a vengeance and not only vote guilty, they're going to vote for death to punish the defense for trying to manipulate them with lies that were disrespectful of a man who is dead.
That you're absolutely right. I can't think of anything else to add to that. That's absolutely perfect, and it's an incredible way to just wrap it up and tell exactly like it is. Wendy Murphy is with us, as well as Levi Page. You can check out Levi Page at Blog Talk Radio. And we have Katie Cool Lady, our insider at the trial of Jodi Arias. We have a couple of questions here, Wendy. If I could just ask you really quickly, Cracker Jacks wants to know, that she thought the witness had to answer only yes or no. Why does the judge let them elaborate?
Well, again, one of the little dirty tricks of the business. When I say to a witness, and as you saw Martinez say to especially Alice LaViolette, yes or no, did you look at the journals? And she goes, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. And the defense attorney was watching Alice start to get sweaty because she wasn't answering yes or no. Martinez was getting angry. The defense attorney goes, Your Honor, I object. Perhaps she can't answer the question yes or no, which is a way for the defense attorney to tell the witness what to say. And the next thing you know, Alice goes, I can't answer the question yes or no. And, of course, she can. I mean, the thing is, they have to think the jury is a bunch of dopes to think they can get away with this. Some of it is subtle. Some of it is so obvious that when she doesn't answer yes and no, and Martinez says five times in a row, that wasn't my question, you know the jury is bubbling with rage, and they are so angry that she's trying to put one over on them, trying not to answer the question. Because remember, when Alice was answering questions by the defense, she was right there. She didn't have trouble answering anything, right? It was right there. Now, mind you, it was all leading questions. The defense attorney basically testified, and then wouldn't you say that Travis was abusive when he did this, and wouldn't you say that Arias was being victimized when that happened? All what's weird is the judge is letting the defense basically testify and having Alice say yes and no in response to questions that she shouldn't be allowed to answer yes or no to, and then on cross, when she's only supposed to say yes or no because it's Martinez's right to ask only yes and no questions, she starts meandering into nonsense. It's outrageous.
It is outrageous. Katie, Cool Lady, I know that you admire Wendy Murphy, as we all do. Do you have a comment on the things that Wendy has been letting us in on, kind of the legal eye to this whole situation in the courtroom?
Well, first of all, if I could put a gesture to the feeling I'm having on the inside right now, it would be like, you know, when your hands are over your head and you're like, I'm not worthy, and you're bowing. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm dying over here because I'm like, yes, I have been saying for weeks, someone has to be outraged in that courtroom. And Juan Martinez is expressing that outrage. This is a crime that cries out for somebody to be outraged. And I'm okay with him expressing that outrage. And Wendy, they lost the males a long time ago. I've been studying that jury for however long, been going almost the entire trial. And
good.
Those males have checked out. The only
good.
It's astounding to me that they got jury number five off, that they wanted to get her off, because I thought that's kind of their last hope, because she was very attentive, the note taker, really paying attention to everything. The males have checked out of this. There was one male, we call him the CEO. Anyway, he's on the front row. He was the one that was the most attentive, the most note taking. In my mind, he's my fantasy foreman, and that man sits there chewing gum or chomping his jaw. He looks like he's going to scream. He's done. He's ready to check the box. I mean, and
good.
He's going to be a leader. I'm just totally projecting and, you know, whatever with this jury, but I stare at them all day. That's what I do, is watch the jury. And there's five men on the back, and all of their behavior is mimicking each other now. When one sits back, they all sit back. They sit back with their jaw out. They are not, like, leaning forward. They are not taking notes anymore. I'm convinced one of those said that really, you know, sarcastic haircut question. I don't see one male on this jury that is engaged with this defense at
all. Good.
I'm so glad.
Let me ask you, Katie, is there a sense, is the family being told how much longer they think the trial will go? Are there going to be too many witnesses on rebuttal?
I don't know about the list of rebuttal, but the last I heard, because I do talk to their victim advocate, is they were told May.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
That, I've been doing a lot of fundraising for the family, because they've still got a haul, you know, of time to be having, you know, they commute from
Listen,
California.
Can I, Katie, I want to tell you something. Please share this with the family for me. I sit on the board of a foundation called the It Happened to Alexa Foundation. We give money to families in need related to transportation costs associated with participation in criminal trials.
Oh,
perfect.
My God. You are an angel. People all over Web Sleuths have been sending gas cards and, you know, because they're driving back and forth every week.
Just send me an email after the show, and I'll make sure that we help you out.
And
oh,
Katie, I have Wendy's email address, so we'll hook you up. That is incredible, Wendy. Wendy, you get up every day, and all you do is help other people. So if you ever need any help from us, call us.
I'll tell you what I want. What I want you to do, okay, very important to me.
Yes.
The JonBenet Ramsey case is important to Web Sleuths. It's always been important to me because I covered it from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the first cases I covered as a pundit. When a child dies and the parents are the suspects, there is nobody out there to pound the pavement and speak for that child, right?
That's right, right.
All these years later, I am up to my eyeballs, sick to my stomach with the passage of time and the truth not being told. Now that it's come out that the parents were indicted, I want you to use your power to spread the word that the truth is there and that the public has a right to access the entire file. Okay?
Hey, Wendy, I got to stop you right now. We've got something in the works, and that's all I can say.
And
but
then
we're
read
working
my
on
book.
It.
Tell people to read my book, because reveal information that has never been revealed before about why that child died, and I want the public to know, because the next time a little girl ends up dead in her parents' basement, we all need to be able to see and understand the crime with a clear lens.
Absolutely. Wendy, you're right. And we will. We are taking up that cause and working to get the grand jury testimony should be released. Legally, it should be released. And it's being worked on as we speak. So wish us luck. And what I'm going to do, Wendy, is I'm going to put your book on our rolling ad for Amazon, and I'll put it in the JonBenet forum. Everybody will see it. They'll be able to grab it at the link. And we will get the truth out about the JonBenet Ramsey case.
Good
we
for you. Thank
will.
You.
That's why I started on the internet, plain and simply, was that case, and I won't rest until the truth is absolutely out. Poor Levi's been sitting there nice and calm. Levi Page, you have a lifeline, if you will, to public opinion. Have you found anybody that has come out and said, you know, I think she's going to get off on manslaughter, or I think it's going to be a hung jury, I just don't think the evidence is there? Have you heard anybody that has a brain stem say anything like that?
Well, it's debatable on whether or not they have a brain stem, but I have heard comments that I have heard comments that people are put off by Juan Martinez's style in the courtroom and that that is going to spare Jody Arias the death penalty or maybe get her a lesser included. But I don't think so. I think that, you know, that's just people maybe watching a five-minute blip of this on television as opposed to the jury who's in the courtroom every single day listening to every minute of the testimony that's been presented to them. And they can see how when Juan Martinez is aggressive, it's the reason he's being aggressive is because the witnesses on the stand are evading his questions and playing a cat-and-mouse game with him like LaViolette and Jody Arias have done with him while they were on the stand. But I just wanted to point out, you know, this trial is about domestic violence. That's what the defense is trying to make it. And there was a case that is almost exactly like this case in Houston, Texas. I forgot the specific names of the individuals involved, but do you remember the case of the blonde woman who lured her husband into the bedroom, tied him up, had
yes,
candles 97
times.
And then stabbed him 97 times and killed
right.
him?
Mm-hmm.
That the prosecutor in that case made Juan Martinez, she was a female prosecutor, she made Juan Martinez look like a cuddly teddy bear. She had, that woman testified on the stand, just like Jody Arias did, and she destroyed her, sliced her up, and the prosecution team in that case even brought in the bed, the exact same mm-hmm. bed, and reenacted the stabbing. The case was later overturned on appeal, but then she was convicted again. And the point of that being is jurors are not – they don't buy the fact that, you know, you stab someone 97 times because you were abused, and they're not going to buy it in this case. And I think that the key contention that the prosecution is going to have to make in this case is in Arizona, for you to get off on self-defense, the jury has to find that it's equal force. There's been no documented evidence of any sort of injury that Jody Arias sustained in the night of the murder. There's none. He has 30 stab wounds, and he was almost decapitated. He was standing over the sink one time, spitting up blood. She still continued the attack. Where is any injury on her that would indicate that she was abused that night?
No, more importantly, Levi, you know, the evidence that kills her is the planning. It was so clear.
Yeah, I agree.
Planned.
The gas cans.
The gas cans kill her. She cannot argue against that.
Yeah, and she lied to the jury on that, too. And I think that was the turning point. They asked her the question, and Juan Martinez provided receipts. And she lied right on the stand to their face to their own question, and that was it. It was all over.
Yep. You lie. You can lie to the cops. Juries will forgive you. You can lie to prosecutors. Jury will forgive you. You cannot lie to the jury. They will not forgive you.
I have a couple of other questions for Wendy.
Oh, please go ahead. And Wendy, I have a few questions too from the chat room. But Katie, cool lady, you have the floor, my dear. You go.
I'm sitting here making notes. So, a couple of things I thought was an interesting little pattern, and I think it was on Samuels and now on LaViolette. You think that the defense is going to go all the way to the end of the day right before the weekend and just let the, you know, the jury be with them. But they end and give Juan Martinez 45 minutes to start his cross in both cases. Like,
yep.
Is that strategic in any way? Because
yep.
that
Absolutely.
Happened with LaViolette.
Yep.
And I thought, and I just want to give one comment and have you
yep.
address both of them. I thought that it felt like to me sitting in the courtroom that when he, you know, he did go a little bit off track with that Snow White stuff, and I was so out of my body, though, for what had happened to Samantha that I, you know, can't be really relied on to be that clear, but I thought I was having trouble following it, actually. But I thought, when I look back on it, that it was a whole lot of posturing of who's going to be the alpha in this dynamic. Like, I got 45 minutes to deal with you, and I will let you know who's in control.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt like that whole Snow White thing was about. So, anyway, what about that 45 minutes? Weird.
Yeah, okay,
window.
A couple of things. Number one, I think that Martinez was trying to do something important, which is to say, I am going to use against you the fact that you have you make a living doing goofy things and making stupid remarks, and you are not going to get away with, you know, turning this into Alice is a great expert, because I'm going to showcase for the jury you know, that you don't answer questions, and I'm gonna put in front of them before this case ends for the weekend that you are avoiding my questions. I think he was going there, and then he got a little bit lost, and that's okay. He'll come right back. I'm not worried about it. He's very skillful, very skillful. And then, but here's an interesting thing. I'll give you another example to make it extremely clear. And I do write about this in my book, by the way. So, you know, these are tactics that you see over and over and over again. And the more you know about them, the better it is to kind of give you that keen eye that you need to make assessments about what you're watching happen in the courtroom. Nothing ever happens by accident. Just know that. But example, in the Kobe Bryant trial, everybody remembers, and probably most of you, even fair-minded people, think that Kobe had the victim had sex with three men in 3 days. And why do we think that? Because on the last day, at the last moment before the long weekend, after there had been tremendous testimony from the medical people about all the vaginal injuries and the bleeding and so forth that the victim had, the question came up, absolutely planned to come at the end of the day by the defense attorney to the medical expert. Would those injuries be consistent with a woman who had sex with three men in 3 days? Objection, sustained, chambers. They all go into chambers. Case ends for the weekend. Okay? So the news cycle for the next 3 days, everyone talked about the victim had sex with three men in 3 days. Oh, my goodness, the victim had sex with three men in 3 days. Everybody forgot that for hours that day there had been testimony about all the bleeding and the injuries and so forth and so on, and he, you know, what he said to her and how grotesque it was. Why is this important? Because good defense attorneys, well, maybe the word good is the wrong word, defense attorneys who know that they want to manipulate emotions and manipulate the court of public opinion, especially in a high-profile case, they plan things to end at the last moment for the purpose of infecting the news cycle. That is what they do. So dragging the clock down, running the clock out, giving Martinez only a tiny bit of time to start his cross, knowing what they know. I mean, think about this like as if it's a sports game. They know how he runs his team. They know how he plays. So they know that he's going to start in a certain way by asking certain questions, and that they're not going to end the day with him making any major points. Why? Because he's not going to make his big points in 45 minutes. He can't.
Right.
So that is completely strategic. And by the way, the victim did not have sex with three men in 3 days in the Kobe Bryant case. That was a lie. A lie. So another thing we know defense attorneys can do is stand up in court, ask a completely false question. For example, did Travis masturbate to the picture of a child? Completely false. No matter what anybody said in response to the question, it's allowed to be asked. Why? Because we let people lie in the name of protecting the rights of the accused. It goes out into the airwaves, even if the jury doesn't believe it. There are people in the real world who do think Travis was a pedophile. Why on earth do we have a constitution that tolerates this? There's a constitutional right to a fair trial. There is no constitutional right to falsely accuse a murder victim of being a pedophile. That is not
Thank
in the Constitution.
You.
Exactly. Absolutely. Wendy Murphy, we have a ton of questions for you. Let me get to some of them, if I may. From Steely Dan, why was the phone call let in? It was recorded illegally, wasn't it? Since it was recorded illegally, why was it let in? Do you know?
Well, that's a good question.
Arizona is a one-party state.
Oh,
okay,
are they?
There you go. That's the answer. That's the answer.
Yes. So it's Utah. That means that same thing in Utah. Go ahead, Wendy.
No, but I was going to say, even in two-party consent states, when phone calls like that are made technically in violation of the two-party consent rule, you can still sometimes use it as evidence because the remedy is prosecution. The remedy is not suppression.
Got it.
Of evidence.
What one-party rule means that only one person has to know the phone call is being recorded. That's how it is in Utah as well. Also, Wendy Murphy, what do you think of the judge? Do you agree with her rulings and how she's doing?
I suppose the one thing I like about her is that she's not being a camera hog. She doesn't appear to be playing up to the cameras at all. And if anything, I think she's coming across as a little bit too motherly. And I'm not sure why she's being as gentle as she is, because some of what the defense has been doing in particular is so inappropriate. The leading questions have been extraordinary. You know, and that makes me crazy, watching the defense basically testify by asking statements that the witness then says yes to is an outrage. But I think she's indulging the defense, knowing this is a death penalty case. She's letting them do whatever they want because she doesn't want it to get reversed on appeal. It's an extremely long, extremely expensive trial, and I understand that. But whether you're going to face the death penalty or not, you don't. The definition of relevancy doesn't change just because there's a death penalty at the end of the day. And, you know, fair questioning, the rules against leading questions, those don't change just because there's a death penalty at the end of the day. And I think she's indulging them far too much, and a different judge probably wouldn't do that.
But like you said, it probably is in the name of let's not lose this on appeal. Levi Page, your thoughts?
Well, I just wanted to make a point about, you know, relevancy. That's a good point, because when Jodi Arias was on the stand, the fact that she was on the stand for, like, what was it, 20 days was outrageous to me. And most of her testimony was irrelevant. And she talked about the past anal sex experiences that she had with her boyfriends, even in high school. I don't understand what that has to do with this case or why even the defense team was bringing that up, because it was under direct examination that the defense brought that up, that she had anal sex in the past. If anything, I think that that probably hurt her case, because it shows that she – she's not uncomfortable with some of the things that Travis Alexander wanted her to do. She's done it in the past. But the fact that we had to hear about this and hear about her past as a childhood in the trial phase, the guilt or innocent phase of this case, is weird. Some of this stuff is things that we would hear about during the penalty phase when she's trying to save her life, but we heard about the fact that her mother hit her with a spoon. We heard about her past anal sex experiences. It was just bizarre. So I think that this judge is letting a lot of things in that is not relevant, and it's becoming a circus at this point.
And some of the stuff we hear is stuff that we would hear if we paid $3.99 a minute. I mean, that's how sexual it is. Wendy, why was all of the anal sex talk allowed in? I'm with Levi. I think everybody wants to know. What the hell does that have to do with anything?
Well, I've said it before. I said it a few minutes ago. It's in my article at my website, wendymurphylaw.com. I write about it. Why is all the sex talk in? It's racism restructured as pornography, and it's Jodi Arias' OJ defense. She wants the jury having tingly parts in their pants so that when they vote for guilt or death or not, they will be titillated instead of emotionally devastated by the dead man's picture. And I write about this in my piece. They're trying to kidnap, if you will, the strong emotions that the jury has about how grotesque the murder was. And how do you kidnap emotions unless you have a very strong counter thing to offer up? What's more emotionally provocative compared to murder than anal sex or oral sex or any of the other crap she talked about? It was meant to titillate and distract. And it did. Let me tell you something. It is a very emotionally evocative thing to talk about. A lot of people paid attention in the public, not because they give a damn about her, but because they thought it was pornography. Look, I got in trouble when I said the word bullshit about what the defense was putting on as evidence on CNN. I got in trouble because it's impolite, it's rude, and it's disrespectful for me to swear. It was the only time I've ever sworn on television in 20 years. I did it on purpose, and I got in trouble for it. I was not on the air, as you may have noticed, for at least a week, I think a week and a half. And that's fine. I deserve punishment. But I was thinking to myself, I have to listen to her descriptions without censor. No censorship going on. She gets to talk about anal sex, and I can't say bullshit?
Mm-hmm. So you did really get in trouble? You're serious?
Sure I did.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it.
Well, it's against the law. I mean, not against the law. It's against their standards.
FCC,
and I know it's against their standards. I did it on purpose to make a point. You can't make me listen to her disgusting, manipulative sex talk and not let me call it what it is. Bullshit.
Right. It's exactly what it is. And we're going to go to Katie Cool Lady now. Katie, I know you're chomping at the bit to ask Wendy Murphy some questions. So you, once again, my darling, have the floor. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm kind of dovetailing off of Levi over there with some of the stuff he was saying, and that it seems to me like so much of what LaViolette is testifying to is hearsay, and that she's she's taking things that Jodi Arias has said, and Jodi Arias is the only historian about this stuff, the pedophilia, blah, 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 but she's saying it like fact, like Travis Alexander then body slammed her, that she's testifying to it, not like Jodi told me this or I've been informed this. She's testifying to it as if it's fact, and it drives me crazy. A. B. I think she's watching the trial. She is knowing too many pertinent details that have to do with the strategy of the trial that would have nothing to do with her assessment of domestic violence. Small details that I keep writing in my notes. She's watching this trial. She's watching this trial. And when she said that that little joking question when Jennifer Wilmot said, do you have problems with your memory? The only reason she would know that that's funny and she got that smirk on her face is if she was watching the trial. Because as Juan Martinez asking that over and over and over to different witnesses, you have problems with your memory. So there's that. Do you think she's watching the trial? And then the third part of my three-part question is, do you think that she knew how badly she was throwing her career under the bus by taking on this case?
That's a good question, too. Well, let me say this. First of all, it's not necessarily the case that she's watching the trial, but she's allowed to be briefed on the trial by the defense attorneys. And I have no doubt that they said to her, look, I've got to ask you about your memory because that's one of the things Martinez is going to use against you. And that's okay. And she doesn't have to explain how she was prepared and so forth. That's all privilege. So you'll never know the answer to the question, did they go out and tell you things about what was going on during the day in court? Because she can say that's privileged. And, you know, it's frustrating, but true. The thing is, as well, she's so well prepared, and they so well prepared Jodi. Remember, Martinez keeps bringing up, you mailed her books, Samuels mailed her books. It wasn't because they give a crap about her getting healing and doing well and getting over her abuse. They wanted her to figure out how to talk like a victim, how to fake sounding like a real victim. And Martinez knows that. That's why he keeps pointing out all this book-sending stuff. It's not that they liked her, and that's not a bias. It's that they're trying to teach her how to sound fake, how to fake sound like a real victim. So your second question was, what was the second one?
Do you, well, the whole business about how she testifies as if something is fact.
And did she know she was ruining her career as well? So let me say the second one first. I knew another of the potential defense experts who was going to testify. He was originally on the list. He was not, in fact, called. And I sent a note around to a list of colleagues of mine who do this sort of work. And I do this work all over the world, all over the country, and we're all on these various lists together. And I mean anti-violence work on behalf of real victims. And I had said, I'm going back a couple of months now, that if so-and-so, now this was not Alice, but the other guy who, it turns out, did not testify, said if he dares take the stand, he will forever be destroyed in this business. He will never get hired again. People will disrespect him. Nobody will come to his conference and so forth and so on. He was very angry with me for saying that. And I said, I don't care if you're angry with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's the truth, and you need to be told that it will destroy your career. Well, not only did I say it about him, I said it in general. So clearly I was making the point about Alice, and Alice was on this list as well. At least I know she knows the people that were on this list because communications were coming to this list about her, when she was going to testify, what days she was going to testify. So she clearly was in communication with people if she's not, in fact, on the list herself, and I think that she is. And I said back to that, anyone who testifies for the defense in this case is destroying their career as well they should. And believe me, all the lawyers will share the testimony. We will send the transcripts around. It's one of the things we do. We will share the transcripts of her testimony, and she will never make it out of the gate ever again because she knows that we're going to use this against her and that against her. She'll never get hired again because she will have lost her value on the world stage. Well, I got kicked off that list for saying that.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Yeah. And that's okay. I mean, it's not. I'm not kicked off. I still get information. They won't let me post information because I said out loud exactly what we all know is true. Mm-hmm. Alice will never be hired again. Or if she is, it won't be, you know, it won't be for any legitimate case where her value matters because she will never be respected after doing this in this case. She will never be respected again. Nor is that expert who provided evidence in the Kobe Bryant trial to falsely claim that the victim had sex with 3 men in 3 days, she can't testify either, because that was the stupidest thing ever said under oath. And as I wrote in my book, I hope she got paid enough. And what is the going rate for somebody's soul these days? I don't know.
Thank you. I have another question, too.
Okay, Katie, go ahead, and then we're going to go to Deborah on the phone. She's called in. So, Katie, you go, and then Deborah's next.
Okay. My other question is, if you were trying this case, Wendy, and you had her right now to cross-examine, what would be your strategy?
Well, I mean, there's so much to do with her that it could potentially get distracting, and that's the danger, giving her too much time on cross where you give her a lot of fluffy airtime, and, you know, I wouldn't want to do that. So you have to be careful. I would absolutely pick up on the occasions when she said things like, I saw no evidence of jealousy, I saw no evidence Arias was abusive toward him, I saw no evidence she was, you know, stalking him, whatever. And I would say, and you said this, didn't you? Now let me show you this and this and this. Do those bits of information change your opinion about whether she was a jealous person? And Alice will say, no, they don't, no, they don't, no, they don't. And, you know, at some point you show her 5 or 6 different things. Does it change your testimony about whether there is evidence that Jodi Arias was jealous of Travis and his other girlfriends? If she says no in response to, you know, several pieces of information being presented to her in front of the jury that prove she was jealous, if she keeps saying no, she looks stupid. So I would do that, not a lot, but I would do it a few times just to rub it in her face. I would also say, you said these things are proof of abuse, isn't that right? And this indicates that this is an abusive thing to do, right? And this is an abusive thing to do, right? And outline each thing that she says Travis did to Jodi. Only I would show that Jodi did those things to Travis, and then say, so you would agree with me that the very factors you said show Travis to be abusive apply to Jodi, assuming, of course, those things are true, right, Alice? Assuming these things are true, that would make Jodi an abusive person, correct? And just line them up, put them right up on a poster, line them up right next to the things Alice said are true about Travis. What's she going to say? You can't, she cannot get out from under her disastrous testimony. She knows it. She knows it. I'll tell you this. I keep thinking she's going to not show up Monday, and she's going to be in the hospital, like when Michael Jackson got the flu and showed up in his pajamas, only it was the fake flu. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking Alice is not going to show up on Monday, and they're going to tell us she's in emergency surgery.
It could be. Hey, let's go to Deborah now. Deborah, you have a question for Wendy Murphy. Deborah, go right ahead. You're on the air.
I do. Thank you, Tricia. I love the show. I'm a good listener.
Thank you.
And thank you, Katie Cool Lady, and nice to see you, Levi. And Wendy, I have watched you forever, it seems, and I really appreciate you, so I was so glad to see you on the show tonight. I have a question, and it was about Alice, and I think you pretty much gave me a good answer. My best friend and I were talking last night. She's in Maryland. I'm here. And she said that there was some talk about perjury process for this Alice LaViolette because of what she's testified to and for.
Well, that's an interesting question. It's a really good question. For the most part, even when experts lie under oath, even when perpetrators lie under oath, they are not prosecuted for perjury. In theory, they can be, but we happen to live in a country where there's a tremendous distortion around what it means to have a right to remain silent. Obviously, Jodi Arias thinks it's a right to lie. It isn't, but she's going to get away with it too, because we do think of the right to remain silent as including the right to defend yourself by falsely claiming innocence. It's frustrating. There's no law that says that. We just tolerate it in practice. And it kind of bleeds over into anyone who testifies for the defense. So it's not technically protected. In other words, she could be prosecuted for perjury. There's nothing that says she can't. But as a matter of practice, it's likely that she won't. Although in my book, again, I keep coming back to my book, every one of my chapters in my book is a dirty trick that we see in high-profile cases. It's an explanation of the dirty trick, and it's and there's something at the end of each chapter saying what we, the people, can do about it. And one of the things I say about these experts who lie for money is we need to be filing complaints against their licensure entities. For example, you know, Alice isn't a PhD, but she apparently has a license to be a counselor of some sort. Perhaps because she lied, even though she gets away with it in the case, maybe
is
somebody
that a current license? Excuse me, Wendy.
She does have a current license. Samuels is the one who was forced because of ethical problems to withdraw his license. Alice is still practicing. Somebody could file a complaint against her with the licensing board. Perhaps it's in California. I know she practices in California. And see if they might take action against her if, in fact, somebody can show that she lied under oath. And I think, you know, she's in a lot of trouble. We'll see where the cross-examination goes. She could repair herself. For example, on cross, she might say, "You're right, I got it wrong. Oh, you're correct. Thanks for correcting me." And if she corrects herself, maybe she wouldn't lose her license. But if she continues in the way that she's been testifying, and if she, in fact, lies under oath, that's a violation of her licensing requirement, and she could face ethical problems at a minimum.
But couldn't they?
Trisha, I have a question.
Yes, Levi Page, go ahead.
There has been a lot of talk, and I haven't confirmed this, but there's been a lot of talk that Alice LaViolette has a book that is coming out soon or is just being released. Has anybody heard that? And some people say that her motive for getting on the stand is getting a lot of attention for this book that is coming out.
It's
I
got
haven't.
A lot of negative attention for it. Let me tell you that. It has like over 300 one-star reviews and scathing stuff on Amazon.
So she does have a book out already. Is it out?
She's got something on Amazon that says something about pre-ordering.
Oh, okay.
And she's gone on there and expressed their outrage about her.
That's
really
right.
I haven't read the book, but, I mean, they have
well,
totally...
Well, see, I think that that may be something that the prosecution can hit on. Because if you do you remember during the Casey Anthony trial, I forgot the witness. It was the witness from the University of Tennessee at Knoxville who came out with the new technology to detect certain chemicals, and they detected that chloroform was found in Casey Anthony's trunk. And Jose Baez really hammered home, you know, the only reason you're testifying is because you're coming out with this new technology, this new equipment, and this trial is like free publicity for that. And I was just wondering, she has a book that's out soon, or it has already been released, it's newly released, and they're saying that she's using this for the publicity. I've heard that. I haven't confirmed it myself.
Well, it is, which there is a book, and it is coming out, and it's already on Amazon. Wendy Murphy, what are your thoughts on what Levi said?
Well, I don't know that it would... It doesn't surprise me because she's been on board with this case for a long time. I mean, for several years she's been on board. I don't know how much she's made in total. I don't know if that came out. But, you know, in some ways you can expect a person who knows they've got 3 years before the trial, that's plenty of time to write a book and take advantage of your high-profile testimony to sell the book. So to the extent she was opportunistic, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know if the jury would use that against her any more than they'd say, you know, that she's not to be believed because she's getting paid all this money and you know, she's doing it for the cash. Whether she does it for the book or the cash or the cash or the book or a little of both, they don't believe her. They don't believe her because it makes no sense.
What she's saying. Deborah, does that answer all of your questions, my dear?
It does. Thank you so much.
Thank
everybody.
You, Deborah. Appreciate you calling in. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay, Katie, cool lady. I can feel it. I can feel it coming through the phone. You've got more to say to Wendy Murphy and Levi Page. I'm going to give you the floor once again.
So if it's for money, I mean, she's not going to be able to retire on what she's making on this case. I mean, she's making a chunk of change, but it seems to me like the real investment would be to make a name for yourself so you can even make more money doing the same sort of thing. So how does that fit? I mean, it's like she's making a limited amount of money from testifying in this trial, but then she's toast. So,
well,
I don't get it.
You know, it's a good question because one has to assume that she believed this case would not be as destructive to her reputation as it appears, and that she was probably, especially in the early days, just thinking to herself, well, you know, I'm gonna make a lot of money. It'll help me sell my book. I'll be on television. And you know the old saying, all press is good press, just spell my name right. The problem is that is only true 90% of the time. There are always those 10% of cases where you become so stigmatized by how people know you that you can never recover. And that's what I was saying on this list on behalf of these experts who I knew. What are you doing? What are you doing? Just because they're desperate doesn't mean you have to sell yourself out. Alice has done some good work. She really has. I don't know her that well. I don't know her reputation, and I don't know if she's ever done something stupid before like this.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to believe that on some level she was just thinking, boy, I finally have this great opportunity for fame. Whether people love me or hate me, I'm going to be highly regarded because at least I'm testifying that, you know, a woman is being excused for killing a man. Boy, that's going to be okay. That's consistent with my background, right? Because she has, for the most part, helped battered women. Now she's still on the girl's side, and she probably has vetted this case through some of her colleagues who have said, and they may just be sort of traditional liberals ideologically, who think it's good to stick up for a woman anyway, and the woman must be mentally ill, so go stick up for her so she doesn't get the death penalty. If she's been vetting whether she should have become involved in this case by speaking to people who are, for the most part, left-wing ideologues who don't like the death penalty and, you know, don't want poor Jody to go to jail because she's a girl, then she's been getting bad advice from people who are saying, oh, you'll be our hero because you're standing up for the girl. Everybody knows that if the gender roles were reversed, this would be so profoundly inappropriate to put on mm-hmm. this kind of defense. And we're only tolerating it a tiny bit because she's female, even though we see it all the time. People who kill, mostly men who kill their wives or girlfriends on the idea that if I can't have you, no one can. It's such a common theme in domestic violence murders. It's not less common when it's the woman who does the killing. I mean, it's less common that it is the woman, but the theme isn't less common. Women are just as likely to act out if I can't have you, nobody can, as men are. Women don't kill as often, but that feeling goes both ways, male to female and vice versa.
One more question.
In my
kind of fantasy, Wendy Murphy as the prosecutor, I love Juan Martinez, but I'm totally enjoying your descriptions of how you would handle it. So how would you work into your cross-examination of her the knowledge that this defense is Jody Arias' third story?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I'm not sure. See, here's another thing I think about with what Juan is doing is he's not beating a dead horse on some of the issues. They don't need to be told. The jury does not need to be told that Jody lied and lied and lied and lied and lied. I guarantee you he will say with Alice, you based your opinion on what Jody said, isn't that correct? And Jody, you know, is an admitted liar. You know that, right? And you depended on the statements of an admitted liar to form your opinion. Yes, I did. You know, that's almost so obvious that he doesn't have to say it, and he certainly isn't going to waste a lot of time making the point because the jury already thinks it. They think that about virtually everything that's going on,
mm-hmm.
that this admitted liar is the basis for virtually all that they're hearing from every other witness who said, well, this is what I heard and that is what I heard. Yeah, but you heard it from a liar. So I do think that he will repeat what he can of the most damning things about what Jody has done, including maybe showing the video of her saying, no jury will ever convict me, the two ninjas did it. You know, one of the things, I'll say this one thing. I haven't heard Juan say this, and I'll share it with you because maybe, Katie, you can share it with them, or maybe he's thought of it. One of the things he hasn't said that I've seen, and it could be that I've missed it, I haven't watched that much, but this whole idea that when she said the ninjas did it, which was story number two, right? These weirdos came in and they killed him and they let her escape and promised she had to promise
right.
not to tell. She nevertheless described correctly where the killing took place and the fact that it was a knife. And now she's saying she has no memory of the knife. I would use that against everybody, and I would say...
Interesting.
Yeah, right? So she had a memory of the knife correctly when she said the ninjas did it. That's pretty damn good guessing for a woman with traumatic amnesia.
Right. Mm.
Wow, that is, you know, Wendy Murphy, that is brilliant, and that's what you are, is absolutely brilliant. You know, somehow get that to Juan Martinez. Katie, we're depending on you to walk up and just say, "Hey,
well,
let me tell you how to do this."
Thursday. I handed him M&Ms on Thursday that had his name on them. So, you know,
there you
got
go.
It in there.
now you can tell him how to do the trial. Katie, you had a follow up?
Me? No, I'm just all ears.
Oh.
I'm just listening.
That's okay. Okay, let's go to Levi Page. Levi, what about that? What about what Wendy just said? You know, she didn't remember anything, but yet when she told the story of the ninjas, it was the perfect description of the murder that she did herself.
Because the only thing that she said that she remembers during the killing of Travis Alexander is that she shot him, and then she had this convenient amnesia, according to Dr. Fogg, Dr. Richard Samuels, and blacked out and doesn't remember stabbing him. But she did... make a point about the knife with the ninjas. I mean, that's an excellent point. And, you know, she sort of reminds me of remember the woman on Falcon Lake, her fiance was killed, and she said that it was, you know, drug dealers in Texas.
That's right.
That did it.
Yes.
Somehow these women always escape. The eyewitness to the crime escapes, but yet they let them live. It's weird. It doesn't make any sense. And that's why she changed it to this domestic violence situation. And talking about Alice LaViolette, she's the one who helped the defense cook this up. She was a consultant to the defense team, and she helped them cook up this entire defense theory. And I wouldn't be surprised if she came in while Jodi Arias was still sticking to the story that the ninjas came in and they brought her in to help them cook up this entire fictitious crap that we're hearing about in the courtroom.
Well, I will tell you this. It was necessary, from the defense perspective, it was necessary that she forget all the stabbings, because that is not remotely reasonable as self-defense goes. It was also important that she falsely claimed to have shot the gun first, because there had to be an explosive event to cause the amnesia. That's another reason she had to reverse the timing of things. Then, because no expert would say you can just kind of have amnesia out of nowhere. You have to do something traumatic. So I suspect that they came up with that idea, perhaps with the help of Samuels. I still think, and it sounds like Katie's confirming this for me, that Martinez has not yet taken advantage of the fact that her big lie, the big lie about traumatic amnesia, even though it appears pretty clearly to be a bunch of crap, that he can prove that it's a lie by demonstrating that she had a convenient memory of the knife and the location and the wound, the nature of the wound. She had that conveniently when she was trying to say that somebody else did it, which belies her claim that everything about the knife killing was suppressed. I do not know personally whether Juan has thought of this, but if it hasn't yet come up, it's worth Katie trying to tell him, because there is nothing else that I've heard that objectively proves that she's lying about the traumatic amnesia, aside from the fact that it sounds stupid and makes no sense and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing objectively to prove that she has lied about it in the way that
I just
suggested.
Well, let's also remember when Samuels diagnosed her with this amnesia and PTSD, she was still going on the story of the intruder. She did not come out and say that she killed him at that point.
Right. I mean, and it's so stupid to say, oh, I had traumatic amnesia, and while I was having my amnesia, I was thinking about how I should lie to protect myself from prosecution, so I came up with the argument about the ninjas, not knowing that my traumatic amnesia was still happening. It's just so stupid. It is so stupid.
There was something I thought Juan could have maybe hammered a little bit more about that amnesia, because Samuel said that when somebody's in that state of that traumatic amnesia, they're just operating on an instinctual level, like just basic instincts, saving your life. And then I would have just listed all the things that she did and said, is this an instinctual level? Putting laundry in a laundry in a washing machine, packing your car. I mean, that car would have been covered with blood on every end. She cleaned herself before she left the house. You know, hiding things, picking up the non-existent rope, deleting photos. He did point to that.
Later,
but
she's making
Katie,
out with another guy.
Katie, I'll tell you why.
She's making out with
that.
Another guy. Is she having amnesia while she's making out with another dude
after
the murder?
Why.
I mean, come on.
I'll tell you why Juan didn't go into it with Samuels, aside from the fact that Samuels was a horrible witness on every level. Horrible. I think Juan's going to have to call in rebuttal his own really, really good expert on traumatic amnesia who will do exactly what you just said, and he won't have to give Samuels the chance to explain himself. This will just be the world's best expert from, you know, Stanford or some very impressive university, unlike wherever Samuels was from, some under a rock somewhere. And it'll be somebody with a license and somebody who's written books about it. And that person will say, when you are in a dissociative state, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, and you can't do that. And that's going to just put that whole issue to rest. That's what I think Martinez is going to do. I mean, it makes sense. If the case is going to keep going till May, there's got to be a rebuttal case planned, and he's got to call his own experts.
Yeah,
that'd
there's
be
one
interesting.
Little detail on Samuels that I wanted to run by you, too, and that I've just lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I'll tell you what. I'm going to jump in and ask Wendy a question. Wendy, can you stay with us just a little longer?
Not too much. I've got to teach tomorrow, and I've got
to put
rascals to bed.
Got it. We'll hurry here.
I remember.
Do you think? Okay, go, Katie. Go.
Okay, it's that when he talked about when he was going to diagnose her with dissociative identity disorder, multiple personality, he said not once, but at least twice. He said, "But I reconsidered that when I talked to the defense team." And I thought, a psychologist is going to reconsider their diagnosis with a colleague, right? You know, like, do you think that this qualifies for multiple personality? But he said, I went to the defense team. It was so obvious to me. He went to them and said, does this fit in your story you're going to tell? And he said it a couple of times. I kept writing that in my notes, like, why is Juan not harping on that little detail, you know?
Well, that's something so just to be fair to Juan, that's not necessarily something you want to say back to the witness because they might fix it. You want to just remind the jury at the end and remember when Samuel said, I was going to give her this diagnosis, but then the defense team talked to me and so I changed it to that one. He doesn't have to give the guy a chance to explain that. He can just say, this is how crazy this nonsense is. It's pure cooked up gobbledygook.
I'll tell you what, Wendy, since you've got to put your little munchkins to bed, we're going to wrap it up with you. Give us your final thoughts. Be sure and plug your website again. There is an ebook. You can download it for an iPad, I believe. Give us all that information and your final thoughts on the jury, and then we'll let you go. It's been so wonderful having you. So,
my pleasure. Please. Thanks for your good work, and I'm so glad that we connected. I mean, things happen for a reason, and I just want to emphasize again the It Happened to Alexa Foundation does have funds, and please share this to the extent victims or families of victims ever need financial support to be able to go to the courthouse. They often don't find us, and we want to be able to. We're the only organization in the country that has money to make sure victims' families can afford to get to the trial. So,
we'll put it up.
Make sure that you know about that. And let me say about my website that there is a piece there about the Arias case that I hope folks will look at. It is just very basic in terms of comparing this strategy of manipulation and, you know, eye-opening stuff, I think. If you don't understand that our legal system doesn't work fairly when it comes to treating victims with respect, if you don't know that treating victims with disrespect is allowed, then you could be watching this case scratching your head and thinking, what the hell is this?
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the ugliness of our legal system and then watching it with that lens of kind of not cynicism, but a clearer kind of disturbing lens is important. And then Again, my website, wendymurphylaw.com, has – I write a very little bit about Jodi Arias in there because my book came out a couple months ago. The trial was already underway, so I couldn't write too much, but there's a little bit about Arias in there. And, you know, the thing about the Arias case that I think matters the most is that we appreciate so much how tough it is for prosecutors to prove cases these days, and whether our legal system has just gotten so out of control, the balance of the scales of justice is so tipped against the interests of fair treatment of innocent victims and their families that we're allowed to see circuses like this, and the public perception of what's going on in our courtrooms. You know, we should be angry that this is an example of the kind of stuff that happens in courtrooms every day where the cameras aren't rolling, and that this is not about telling the truth. This is about making money for experts. It's about making money for defense attorneys. It's about distorting the truth. It's about a legal system that doesn't understand what it means to have a fair trial, because this is so over the top, you can't call this a fair trial. I don't know what you call this. And what I worry about the most is that we're forgetting Travis Alexander, a man who, did, no matter what you think about how he was as a boyfriend, did not deserve to be killed, much less slaughtered like an animal. And I think this case is easy. On a very basic level, it's a slam dunk prosecution. We need to really tell the truth, hammer home how unfair this is, and never forget that this happened in an American courtroom, because it's going to happen again. Every defense attorney who watched the Kobe Bryant case started doing those same kind of crazy tactics in their cases. Every defense attorney watching this case unfold is going to do this in the next case where somebody else ends up dead and slaughtered. We can't tolerate. This is not justice. We cannot tolerate a circus in the name of fair trial, justice, constitutional rights. I'm ashamed of my legal system to watch this case unfold.
Wendy Murphy, thank you. I can't thank you enough. You have been such an amazing guest. WendyMurphyLaw.com. We'll put that up on Web Sleuths. Be sure and buy Wendy's new book. Go to her website, WendyMurphyLaw.com. Wendy, thank you so much. We'll have you on again real soon.
Thanks to you too,
thank
Tricia. Bye-bye.
Wendy.
Bye. Bye-bye. Katie, bye.
Okay. Off to put the little ones to bed. Levi Page, final thoughts. Do you think there is a – let me ask you one question, Levi. Do you think there's any possibility there might be one person on that jury that will hang the whole thing up?
I don't think that there's a possibility that there's someone that's going to hang her on – find her not guilty of all charges. She's going to be convicted of something, and I think that there's so much evidence of premeditation, renting a car, using gas cans, bringing the gun that you stole from your grandparents, the same kind of gun conveniently, coincidentally, is stolen from your grandparents before Travis Alexander is shot with the same gun. And I think that Alice LaViolette is going to be destroyed. She listed traits of abusers, and one of the traits that she listed is hacking into their victims' social media sites, and that is something that
Jodi
Arias has done. That's not something that Travis Alexander did. And I think that Juan Martinez is doing an excellent job. And I think that a lot of people are criticizing him for the Snow White thing. I just want to comment on that. And what I think he's going to do with that is, you're saying that Snow White, a Disney character, is the victim of domestic violence. And you wrote a paper about that. And what you can do is think of a Disney character and say she's a victim of domestic violence. Then you can say that anyone is a victim of domestic violence, and that's what you're bent towards. You have a bias towards that. And any little situation, you're going to see domestic violence in it. So I think that's the point that Juan Martinez is going to make. And I think it's a good point to make in this case, because I think the central theme of the defense's case is she's a victim, and she's really not. She's not a victim. And we're not really hearing about Travis Alexander, and I think Wendy Murphy made an excellent point. He never deserved to be killed. And, you know, people, when they think of Travis Alexander, it's unfortunate that they hear these sex tapes, mm-hmm. where he doesn't know that he's being recorded by this bitch, but she's recording him anyway, and it's something that's supposed to be intimate. But we really don't think about where he came from. And I've listened to interviews with friends of his where they say that he came from nothing growing up, that he and his mother, she was a single mother. She struggled to raise him. They were homeless sometimes. And look at what he did. And he was striving to become better and do something in life and be financially successful and motivate other people. So I think that that's what we need to remember with Travis Alexander instead of this crap that we keep on hearing from this sleazy defense team. And I think they really are sleazy in this case. And, Katie, you're in the courtroom every day. To me, this defense team does not come off as credible, and I'm really repulsed by Nurmi, the lead defense attorney in this case, because it seems to me that he's sitting back. He doesn't act very professionally. He's sitting back, and it's almost like he's sitting there watching it with a beer in his hand, the Super Bowl, instead of a criminal trial. I mean, something about him repulses me.
Yeah, he instills that reaction in a lot of people. And then you've got, on the other hand, Jennifer Wilmot, who I described this week as seeming like she's, you know, on a cooking show. Like, then, let's put the onions in the pot. Okay, thanks. And she is witnesses are smiling and giggling and like, ah, and they're giggling at the most inappropriate things, and she has this inappropriate smile. So it's like she doesn't look like she's taking it seriously. And then I look at the jurors, you know, I study the jurors, and I will tell you every single time that that little giggle happens between them or that little inappropriate little shared joke, I have not seen one juror even crack a smile, which says something, because usually when people are sort of smiling, you just sort of, like, if somebody yawns, you yawn. You know, if somebody smiles, you sort of smile awkwardly. I have not seen one juror in any way, shape, or form join them in that bizarre little girl's club.
She will be convicted, and she will get the death penalty in this case. I mean, because let's remember, there was blood in the sink where he was standing over the sink in the bathroom coughing up blood, and she continued to attack him. I mean, you can't attack someone. Yeah, you can't attack someone while they're coughing up blood in a sink and claim self-defense. That's not self-defense. They're not being the aggressor. You're being the aggressor. The defendant is being the aggressor. He has a stab wound, like Katie just pointed out, to his back. That's not self-defense. The defense is going to – the jury's going to use their common sense in this case. And I think, you know, Wendy said that she thinks that the prosecution is going to call their own expert witness. And I don't even think that the prosecution needs to even do that at this point. I mean, I think that the biggest asset that the jury has is their common sense. And they don't need some, you know, professor from Stanford University who is a psychologist or a psychotherapist get on the stand and refute what Dr. Richard Samuel said, because our common sense already refutes what he said.
Very good points, Levi Page. Hey, go drink some hot tea and lemon and rest that voice, rest those golden tones. And
I feel fine. It's just allergies.
it just sounds bad. Okay, my dear. We'll be talking to you soon, Levi. Thanks for calling in. You're welcome to stay on. We're just going to continue chatting and move on here a bit. Katie Cool Lady, your final thoughts on everything we've discussed tonight in the Jody Arias trial and anything else you might want to say?
Well, you know, just to put my – well, first of all, I'm just completely blown away by Wendy Murphy, I'll tell you that. I mean, I'm literally going to go back and listen to this later tonight so I can take it in again. Just, you know, so much condensed information there. So, of course, my orientation is the support of the family. So kind mm-hmm. of the update on that this week was, you know, Tuesday, I just made it for the very last hour of court on Tuesday, and I passed them a big package of, you know, cards and some bracelets that somebody made and – you know, all kinds of wonderful things. I passed to them on Tuesday, and then I didn't go on Wednesday because that's when she had her little faux illness on Wednesday, so it got mm-hmm. canceled in the afternoon. And then Thursday was when I showed up on my doorstep. I mean, these custom-made M&Ms, three
wow.
different styles. One said Juan Martinez, the other said Justice for Travis, and the other said, well, it's your fog. So I bring these into court, and I couldn't bring them all because there were so many. I mean, it's this big box of all these mm-hmm. M&Ms. So picture this. I get into the courtroom early, and there's another case going on. So there's this whole other situation. It's bizarre because it's like somebody's in your house, you know. And there's Juan Martinez sitting by himself on the front row all the way over to the left. And then I go sit down. So I'm like 3 seats away from him. And I'm thinking, I've got these M&Ms in my purse. I would love to show them to him. But there's been this huge controversy that just happened the week before about him taking pictures on the courthouse steps. I'm like, I'm not going to approach him on something like that. Well, then the victim advocate sat down next to him. And I'm actually working on a project with her where I'm going to create a brochure that you can hand to victims to help give guidelines for to create a victim impact statement. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk to her about that. So I scooted over there, and Juan Martinez turned around as I moved over there and, like, smiled and said hello. And I just blurted out, I said, I've got a purse full of M&Ms with your name on them. And he goes, well, let me see. And
I bet he was not expecting that. That was the last thing he expected to come out of your mouth.
Then I showed them, and this is from a Web Sleuthers, by the way. And so then I showed them, and he took them in his hand. He goes, can I keep these? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure you can keep those. You know, like, they're for you. But I would have never given them, you know. So that was totally cool. Just a little color from the courtroom from last week, you know.
Oh, we love it, Katie. We love you so much for doing this for us. I mean, you have made this trial such an educational trial for all of us. It's very sad. It's very heart-wrenching. But we're learning a lot about the court system, and that's because of you, Katie. So anything else you would like to add? You take whatever time you need. Are you all wrapped up? Are you ready to rock out? Or what's your deal?
Just two more things, and
sure.
I posted this. But one is that very day, the M&Ms, that whole day on Thursday, I was approached because, you know, people were curious about, like, what did you just hand to Juan Martinez in terms of the media, because they're right behind us. And I said, those were some M&Ms with his name. You know, it's just a cutesy, fun little thing. But I thought they would kind of make fun of him with that, so I wouldn't talk to any of them about that. You know, I'm just like, done. No, you know, they wouldn't take pictures of him. No. I just didn't want them to trivialize it in any sort of stupid way.
Sure.
So I didn't allow that. But because I started this conversation with this ABC 15 reporter, and she was sort of like, who are you? What are you doing here? Why do you have these M&Ms? Whatever. That was the night I ended up on the news, and I got to, as you know, Tricia, be on the local news. The first story on the 10 o'clock news was me, and you know, it was a little update on Jodi Arias' trial, and then me. They did a whole little profile of you know, me. And Web Sleuth got mentioned on it, and the whole theme of the profile was the fundraising that I'm doing for the family.
Oh, that's,
you know,
such great news.
Yeah, so, I mean, I you don't even know how much it touches my heart that Wendy Murphy said, you know, I think all things happen, like, for a reason or serendipity or something like that, because she felt like she ended up on the show with me so she could tell me about that foundation, you know, which is amazing. So there was that that I wanted to pass along, and there is a link to that on Web Sleuth if people want to see that little piece on TV. There's a link to it, and they did a story on it as well. And I also wrote a whole piece this afternoon because I've really been affected by this thing. I'm even more affected by it now to hear Wendy Murphy say she thinks that whole thing was strategized for Alice LaViolette to walk up. I really thought it was just a spontaneous, weird thing. But to hear that was strategized, it really just makes me ill. It really does.
She makes a great point. I mean, you can just see Juan Martinez saying, what did you say? I was just saying how sorry I was. And it makes the witness look better. I can't think like that. I don't know about you, but I can't think that deviously.
I can't believe I'm that naive with everything that I've been through that my mind did not even go there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought it was just bad enough that she approached her, but I just thought it was some sort of spontaneous whatever. But I'm glad that I've been pushing this issue. And believe me, I've talked to Janine Driver. I've talked to Beth Karras. I've talked to Nancy Grace, producer. You know, I've been really pushing this out there because I want this expletive exposed for that. Here she's a domestic violence expert about, you, like, you don't violate people's boundaries, you don't blah blah blah, you know, that's inappropriate, and yet she did that herself in the courtroom. I find that abusive. Personally, I find that abusive, and the reason I do is outline on Web Sleuth, because I wrote this afternoon the whole story of what happened to me that caused me to get an attorney and my attorney go to the Arizona State Legislature to get this law changed so what happened to me could never happen to someone else, which involved a representative for my sister's killers walking into my house and ambushing me in my home. So this is why this issue is so important to me. And if anybody's curious about that, there is a post about it on Web Sleuth where I documented what happened to me with that. So anyway,
thank you for
things.
And thank you for being so open about your personal situation, Katie. That helps us so much to understand what it's like to be in your shoes. Of course, we can't, no one will ever know the feelings and the trouble and the heartache you went through, but you're showing us that side, and I think it's important for everybody to learn just what victims go through even after the murder. You have the trial, they're re-victimized all over again. So,
well,
Katie,
it's important also for me to share it because I get so much support from Web Sleuths, Tricia.
Well, wonderful people. They are great people. Let me tell you, I love those posters. They are the best. And the moderators, shout out to them. They work so hard, especially on that forum. So thank you very much. Katie, we'll talk to you next week, definitely.
Awesome. Okay.
Okay.
Hey, great
okay,
to talk with you, Levi, too. Great to
Isn't he the best?
Yeah.
Take care,
I
my dear. I don't know. Is
okay,
he still here?
Soon.
Oh, he left.
Okay. Next week, Tricia, and
take
everybody
care.
Else.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Miss Kimster. Well, let's get Kimster on here. Kimster?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
You're
was
here?
I muted? I was muted.
You were muted. That's okay. Wow, that was, I have to say, I mean, I didn't do anything. This was the easiest show I've ever done. I just went, Wendy Murphy, Levi, Katie Cool Lady, and they did all the work. So it was a great show. It was absolutely wonderful. And I just want to remind everybody, the show is always available. The link that you use to get to the show now, if you're listening live, that same link will take you to the show again, and you can download it. You can download it to your phone. You can listen to it anytime, anyplace, and it will be up forever. So now it is time once again, Miss Kimster, for our Web Sleuths Hot Cold Case. But you want to tell us one little thing before the cold case, right?
Well, let me tell you, you used to start out the show with my title, and it got so long, I think you kind of got lost in it.
I
but
did.
I think we're going to have to start calling me the Cold Case Queen.
I love that.
Because, I think that needs to be my title because I'm this week I've got some all kinds of news about cold cases. And,
well,
you know,
we will
cold
definitely
cases,
change it. Yes. You need
yeah,
a change.
Cold Case Queen. First of all, I wanted to update everyone about the Chain of Hope ride for Jennifer and Adriana Wicks. When I wrote this morning about what I was going to talk about tonight, it's been updated since then, Tricia, what I told you. But Kathy Nail, who was on our show last week, had the most outstanding result this time she's ever had. And there's videos that you can catch. I saw one on Facebook, and I'm going to try to get it on websleuths.com. But there's also another one on websleuths.com that shows you the hundreds and hundreds of bikers that showed up for the event yesterday. It is just absolutely amazing. The rumbling
Wonderful.
Could be heard. That was in Tennessee, for those of you back in Tennessee. The rumbling could be heard all the way here in Oregon. I heard it. I felt it on the ground. It was absolutely amazing, and there's a really good clip. It's about 10 minutes long that I put on Web Sleuths that was done. It has Kathy on there. It shows a song that was sang. Acapella is beautiful. A pastor spoke, and then they showed all the bikers, and it's so moving. I hope you guys get a chance to get over there. That's the Jennifer and Adriana Wicks case. They're still on the front page at www.websleuths.com. Also, I have some exciting news from my local area. There's
right.
been a lot of, yeah, this has been so exciting, and I couldn't wait to tell you guys all about it. There was a lot of chatter in the area this week over a cold case. 22 years ago, after a 13-year-old girl went missing, the Linn County Sheriff's Office arrested her stepfather and charged him with murder.
Right on. Love it.
And
thank goodness.
I'm so excited. I have a friend that's actually a deputy for the department, so I feel like I'm really, you know, part of this movement somehow. It's a movement. We're all so excited. Rachanda Pickle disappeared from her home that she and her mom shared with Dan Aykroyd. Sorry about that. John. It's John Aykroyd.
I saw that. I'm like, what?
John Aykroyd. I know, I've never heard of an Aykroyd other than this guy. Oh, boy, wait till you see his mugshot. He is not Dan Aykroyd. John Aykroyd on July 10th of 1990. At the time, Aykroyd told police that he and his wife left the home in the early early morning for work. And he returned later in the afternoon to find Rachanda missing. A search for Rachanda lasted several weeks, but her body was never found. On Tuesday of this week, John Aykroyd was arrested inside the Oregon State Penitentiary because, guess what? He was in Salem, Oregon in jail for what? Guess, Tricia.
Domestic violence.
No, murder.
What? Oh, my God.
He murdered. He murdered again. A woman in 1978, a woman named Kay Turner. You know, I'll always say the victim's names. That's one thing that Susan Murphy Milano said, always say the victim's names. He murdered Kay Turner. Sheriff Tim Mueller, who, by the way, I had a chance to meet once. He's my hero over here. He said in a press release that the arrest was based on advances in technology. They haven't said what it was yet. I don't know if they're waiting for court or what. But anyway, I'm very, very excited. Everyone here is very happy for Tim Mueller. He's a fantastic crime fighter over here, and we are blessed to have him serving in Oregon. So shout out to the good guys in law enforcement. I know not all of them are as proactive as Tim Mueller, and unfortunately this next case is going to be about that a little bit too. So are you ready?
I'm ready. You got to do it. Go for
it. All right.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. How does an engaged college student who is the member of a sorority suddenly go missing without a trace? I don't have any idea, but that's what happened to Sylvia Lewowski on September 6, 1975. And her family and friends are asking you, the listeners, for help. According to the police report posted on websleuths.com, the reason for her absence was a fight with her boyfriend at Kmart. But who reported her missing? Her fiancé? No, it was Eva Lewowski, Sylvia's mother. She tried to report her missing immediately, but she had to wait 24 hours. Her fiancé is reported to have said they had a fight and that she threw her glasses on the dashboard and left. He seemed agitated that she took off with the engagement ring that he had bought her. Sounds like a compassionate person, right, Tricia?
Oh, I have a feeling.
Well, get this. According to an insider in the case that is posting on websleuths.com, later the fiancé was reported to have said he had the ring in his possession.
Oh, dear.
So how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Also, a friend posting on websleuths.com has said that she contacted the fiancé just a few months later, and he didn't even want to talk to her. And this is the part that I kind of mentioned a little bit earlier. What's even worse, law enforcement didn't interview her either.
Oh,
when
dear.
Sylvia went missing, and yet she was one of the last people to see her.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, it seems to me, from what I've been reading, she has some important information to share. Now, of course, we are not blaming anybody in this case, but these are some questions that I'd like to see answered, and I would love to see it if the members would go to www.websleuths.com to help Sylvia's loved ones in the search for Sylvia. And in the upper right-hand corner of that page, you'll see a picture of Sylvia along with the link to her thread, but only if you're a member of Web Sleuths. So please join today. And Tricia, how much does it cost to join websleuths.com?
Well, we have our spring sale going on right now. We've cleared out our shelves. We've put it up for absolutely nothing. It costs you nothing to join Web Sleuths. We need an email address to confirm you're a living human being and not some sort of odd bot out there trying to join. And that's all you need to do. And if you don't think, if you're saying, hey, look, I'm not a good sleuth, I can't do this, wrong. You don't need to be a sleuth. Just come on and just post in a cold case to the family and say, I'm thinking of you. You can really make a difference by doing something as simple as that. Kim, sir, thank you, my darling friend. We'll have you on again next week, and we will change your title. We'll make it really big, I promise. It'll be a big deal. I'll buy you a crown, too, okay?
Oh, I can't wait.
Yes.
Make sure it has lots of shiny stuff because I'm part raccoon.
Will. It will. Well, I know you're attracted to shiny stuff, so we'll make sure it has lots of diamonds. Kimster, thank you so much, my darling. And, hey, that does it for Trisha's True Crime Radio. Now, do remember this, please. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests, and I take no responsibility for them except my own, of course. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from websleuths.com, LLC, and forumsforjustice.org. In other words, if you get your true crime panties in a wad, don't scream at Web Sleuths or Forums for Justice. You scream at me, okay? It's my show. And I'll help you get those panties unwadded if you're upset about something. Do keep in mind that we have open now the space for a sponsorship for Trisha's True Crime Radio. If you're interested in sponsoring the show, then drop me an email at TGRIF, that's TGRIF, at xmission.com. And finally, do not forget to go to WendyMurphyLaw.com. Check out her book. Check out what she's wrote about the case. She is amazing, as is Katie Coolady and Levi Page. Thanks to everybody who joined us. Thanks to the people in the chat room and to you listening. And remember, it's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss current events and true crime, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.